PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on Twitter at Canadan Golf, as well as on Instagram at Canadan82, as I've been trying to post a little bit more on that lately, as well as Off Course THP. With me this week, recurring guest on the show, my good buddy Josh Babbitt, king of the Hackers Paradise. Welcome back, my friend.
Glad to be here.
So you can find Josh at THP Golf, as well as at JB_THP Golf on Twitter. Are you Instagram? You're involved in the Instagram, the THP stuff with
do either just the THP Golf Twitter account or the Instagram account. That's a group effort. I have the own personal Twitter, but as you guys discussed heavily last week, I've kind of taken a back to that. It's a backseat to that. It's not a great place to be right now.
So true or false, if you had your own personal Instagram account, it would be 90% food and 10% arrow, your dog.
Maybe. No, I'd be probably closer to 50% arrow, 50% food.
Yeah. Okay. Because I know like arrow's there. You get a couple good shots a day. We see that a bit on the forum. But it's you're a foodie, man. There's no way around it.
No, and we actually, I'm going to completely go off course right now. My wife and I were gifted a gift certificate that covered a portion of this restaurant we got to go to in Nashville called Catbird Seat. And this is a restaurant with no menus that changes every day. And it's a 12-course tasting menu. So figure 12 times they will bring out one, maybe up to three bites of a dish. And you have no idea what's coming. They explain it. There's a drink pairing to go with it. And I will tell you, it was the greatest food experience I've ever had in my life.
Oh, so you did it. It's done. I know you had started a thread. There was a discussion on the THP community forums about this.
Yes, going experience to dinner with no menu.
I just assumed it was a troll Canadan thing because you figured I'd say I wouldn't want to do that.
Went and all the pictures are in there now for people who want to see. It is mind blowing. It's stuff that I didn't think I'd like. I tried and I liked. Everything there was absolutely amazing. I can't recommend doing it enough. It's not an inexpensive way to dine. It's not something you can go on a whim on a Friday night. This place takes months to get a reservation, but for special occasions, this was absolutely dynamic and I cannot recommend it enough.
So three-ish bites of everything. What if you really like something? Can you be like, I'll just have that like again?
No, it doesn't work that way.
Because I mean, I know we've had some pretty interesting dinners where they bring out this just palette of food and you go after it, right? And there's no way that three bites would be enough. Was that okay for you? Were you functional?
Yeah, you know what's funny is people ask that, like, did you stop and get a burger on the way home and things like that? But the truth is, think about it. Let's say you sit down to eat a cheeseburger. How many bites is that cheeseburger? 8?
I don't know.
Maybe 10?
Who's eating it?
You are.
Oh, man. How good is it?
It's delicious.
Yeah, 3, 4, no. Yeah, probably 8 to 10 is fair.
So double that for this, even though they're all individual dishes, and you are full. And there's a drink pairing with each one that is, it's just next level stuff that I had seen done, and I've been to a couple things that on a different scale than this, but this was pretty special, and we are way off course already.
This is your fault. So usually it's mine. This week it's your fault. We did not have that on the approved documentation for the show story that they're putting out. So let's just go right back to actual golf discussion and focus on something that came out today, which was that Mr. Patrick Cantlay received the Player of the Year award from his fellow competitors. What do you think of that?
I thought it was, I'm not going to say the right choice. I thought it was the expected choice.
So you think there's a right choice?
Yeah, well, it's a very weird year. And I view that this in a lot of different ways. And I've looked at it from every angle. And I've always said it's the player of the year, not the guy who gets hot for a couple of weeks. But the truth is in today's current climate and the depth of field where winning a couple of times is incredibly difficult, it is the guy who gets hot for a couple of weeks. He did it at the end and it worked out great. I think overall he had seven top tens. I might be off there. I'm going off memory. Seven top tens, a bunch of wins. What do you have? Four wins?
And four total wins if you count the last tournament.
Right. But that brings in the question mark, which is one, the last tournament. Yes, he won and he won the FedEx Cup. But if you're not going to count other tournaments, or if you don't want to go back and rehash what happened in Ohio to John Rahm, it's hard to count this as a win when you start with the lead. He did what it took to win, but he didn't. It's not a regular tournament. It would be like any other one where you're handicapped to start with. So I struggled giving him that win, but he did win it.
But that's the weird part, right?
Yeah, if you want to get into the dynamics of it, if you were to say, okay, well, maybe he gets a half a win for that, and then he gets a half a win when they were down by six strokes to John Rahm heading into Sunday, and nobody's saying that it's Cantlay's fault and not John Rahm's fault, but all of a sudden it starts to even out, and then you add in John Rahm had a major, and he led the tour in top tens by a landslide. I mean,
it was like 17 or 16. It was a lot.
Yeah, I think he had 15 or 16 to 7.
Well, I was counting Ohio for the record.
Yeah, and it makes it harder to make that debate. Had it gone to anybody else other than Cantlay, that would have been an issue.
Interesting. But
it was voted on by the peers, and some even brought up, well, you know, Cantlay's American, and most of the PGA Tour are American, and that's the reason. I don't know if I'd say that, but the guy, he played great golf, and he won the FedEx Cup, and I've always asked, if the playoffs and every other sport are to determine the champion, shouldn't we just have the playoffs be the player of the year and then you take out all this debate?
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, what is the point of having a player of the year if the assumption is just that, oh, either total number of wins, which I think there's an asterisk there because we had this discussion last year, and major victories obviously hold much bigger weight than traditional victories. And I actually brought this up in the forum today. It's kind of funny that what happened to Rahm in Ohio caused Cantlay to win, basically. I mean, let's be honest. Morikawa and Cantlay didn't exactly go out there on Sunday and say, I want to win. No, you want to win. No, it was more like, here, you have the win. No, you have the win. It wasn't exactly, I think they both shot one under or something like that on the day. It wasn't, it wasn't like a lightning in a bottle came out and dominated. That was Rahm's to win. And if you switch that up and say, assuming Rahm doesn't, you know, vomit all over himself on a Sunday there, he's going to win that tournament. Now he's got one win and a major win, and Cantlay only has three wins. I think every single person out there would say that major win's worth two or more traditional tour wins. Would you
especially
not?
When you add in the top tens.
The top tens, the big seller. And then you go to the tour championship and you have that little asterisk there that says, well, sure, he won with a four-stroke lead, but he also lost gross to none other than John Rahm, who almost beat him anyway with a chip running by the edge on the 18th hole to tie. You know, there's so many little silly things. And it's like, if you can't even have a debate about it, if the assumption is, well, his peers voted on it, like, is there an incentive for them to sit down and run the numbers? Do they really care that much? I bet you go to ask Kevin Kisner, who is just happy to make money every week based on the feedback he gives, who the player of the year is. Do you think he really cares who's winning more than anyone else or who gets more top tens?
I've always related that back to college athletics. I don't even know why we say college anymore. and how they have a coach's poll and the coaches are polling. These coaches aren't watching the games.
Yeah.
Nick Saban's not sitting down and seeing how Wyoming did last week. He's too busy beating Mercer or whoever other junk team right. They put in front of them. Do you think the coach at Ohio State is worried about what Boston College did that weekend? No, he's too busy losing. You know, I made a subtle joke yesterday that, boy, I'd hate to be a wife in Ohio this week with both the Browns and Ohio State losing, because I'm sure there was some TV yelling going on. But, and it's a bad joke, and it's true, but it's a bad joke. But, you know, I've always said that I don't know what the solution is, because if you have the media vote, we know where they stand with a couple of players, and they're never going to get a vote. You players voting, sure, they pay attention, but the Kevin Kisner in his off week isn't tuning into the John Deere. You know, like, there's got to be a better way. And if player of the year matters, and I'm not sure it does, but if it does, and we live in a time where you can calculate everything, why not just have it be a simple calculation?
I was about to say, if we can do strokes gained putting, we can do player of the year. I mean, it can't be that hard. And then you look at, and going back to the ROM thing, I started a thread on THP that we're releasing this on a Friday, but actually recording on, what is it, today, Tuesday?
Today's Tuesday.
I started today thinking we could have a really interesting discussion about it. And there were a lot of people and no issue with them having this opinion, but it seemed very matter of fact that, well, Cantlay won it. There's no point in having this discussion. Like, but look at all these other variables. Like Rom was relevant in every single major and Cantlay got cut from two of them. It's like, you can't pretend that just didn't happen. It's not like winning or bust, even though it seems to be the case. And in a bigger one, and I think this goes back to a couple years ago, one of the guys who was a runner-up, won two or three times super early in the year. It might have been when JT won really early in the year. And people were sort of discounting that because it was like in the Hawaii swing when you forget which even season you're in. It's like, yeah, I don't see any reason why. And it's, even though this is more of like an honors for the record books type of thing, I don't see why we can't do some sort of metric to create it.
Well, and it still goes back to the same thing. If the FedEx Cup is a calculated method, whether somebody likes it or not, that runs for the entire season, why isn't that used to determine player of the year and not just the FedEx Cup champion?
That's a good question.
Can't for the life of me figure it out. Why do we even have this vote?
So I got to know, going back to the FedEx Cup and the final tournament, do you think Eastlake could be done like wildly better?
So I had the opportunity to play there a number of years ago, and it's a fantastic facility. On TV and for a tour stop, it is flat out horrible for the tour championship. It does no justice to the course. There's very little drama. I don't know. It just, thank God they switched nines. I think they could switch some things up, but, and I understand why it's held there and it makes a lot of sense. I don't know. Based on searches, social media, the metrics that I pay attention to, it did very little in the way of viewership for the core golfer.
Yeah. I mean, we already had the Solheim to watch anyway. Fortunately, it wasn't the final match that day, but definitely more compelling golf going on over there. But
agreed.
As it comes down to the whole strokes ahead type of thing, does it seem kind of ridiculous that one guy who happens to get hot late, maybe wins a tournament in the playoffs, gets like a 6 or 7 stroke advantage off another guy who's played well all year?
I have a minority take in that I'm not sure. Most people are 1,000% against it.
Adamant one way or the other. Yeah.
Yeah. And I go back to the old scenario, which is the guy who comes in and wins that tournament and then stands on the side as the guy who won or played better leading up to it hoists the giant cardboard check, Happy Gilmore style, that says $150 million, you know, $15 million. So I don't know the best solution. I do love the solution that the winner of the final event wins the cash. I just think that's the way to go. I just don't know the best way to get there. This comes off on Thursday and Friday as a super weird event.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. At this point, do you really need the guy who's way back, who came in at 20th or 30th or whatever the last person is, to even play?
Yeah.
Are they going to make up 10 strokes?
Well, I think they're making like 400,000 finishing last in that tournament. So I suppose they probably want to play. So let me ask you another question to that. I was actually watching it up with family, hanging out with my mother-in-law, and said I think it was Cantlay putting in the final hole. I said, if he makes this putt, he wins $15 million. And she looked at me and she's like, what? I'm like, do you think that sort of money on the table is a little bit ridiculous? And I know they have to give the players a reason to be invested in the playoffs, even though it's absurd that they're not, considering the amount of purses are right now anyway. But don't you think that's a little bit insane for it to be $15 million?
Well, and it's not just a check. It's done a different way than that. But I believe that the FedEx Cup in general, the PGA Tour does a lot of things really, really well from a marketing standpoint. The FedEx Cup is a disaster to me as far as marketing. Nobody really can figure out the scoring and standings. And they talk about, oh, the math is too hard. It's really not. It's just they never explain it. They put it out once and then that's it. It's rarely talked about during the year at all these other events when it could be mentioned constantly to drive traffic. And then it's called the playoffs, but it's not really the playoffs. And it kind of is the playoffs. At the end of the day, it's a tournament. It's a 4-week tournament series to win a huge sum of cash.
So
I don't know. Have a trophy, do something. I don't know.
I have a question and it's kind of on the fly. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready.
What would you think about the top four guys on the FedEx Cup point standings at the end of the year doing a match style experience back-to-back weekends? So weekend one, and even if it was a one round thing, first weekend, it's the two of them to get into the finals. Second weekend, it's the finals. They treat it with a little bit of fun and showcase that for everyone.
I think that it sounds great on paper. And then you have to realize that, let's say it's Patrick Cantlay and Kevin Na in the finals, and you have a weekend of golf to fill and all 19 viewers.
Not a weekend, though. We're talking about one night, one round of golf.
Yeah, I don't think it works.
Interesting.
I love the idea in theory, but golf as a viewership sport needs names. Hmm. And I'd like to see Patrick Cantlay become a name as soon as he picks up the pace. I think Kevin Na is a great name and could be fun. There's got to be something more to it. Just like there's got to be something more to the FedEx Cup to give the hook. Like I've said before, you know, they're playing for $15 million. And one of my biggest issues on tour is pace of play, which, you know, the easiest way to PGA Tour, the easiest way to fix the PGA Tour's pace of play issue is penalize FedEx Cup points. It doesn't hurt them during the event, but you could do it immediately. You fall behind, you lose a FedEx Cup point, you know, so on and so forth. And watch these guys when $15 million is on the line, all of a sudden say like, wait, what? Because some of the golf in these last few events, Bryson gets hit hard over the pace of play thing, and he's not exactly quick. But Cantlay has got to be the slowest guy in the history of PGA Tour. And I like Patrick Cantlay. He's super likable. He gives great answers to the media. Everything about him says, you know, this is the guy you want to see succeed until you watch him putt and shuffle his feet for 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think figuring that one out might improve more than anything else, getting people to actually watch, because there's nothing worse than just sitting there waiting for something to happen during an event. And I guess that's what you always worry about when your final event's there. And we talk about this a little bit when the match play tournaments are out there. I mean, if the golf isn't good, then what are we doing? At least the players are good, right? At least the players are interesting. And if they're not either, then what do you have?
And that's the big risk you run. And that's why some of these tournaments have great ratings and some of them don't. It's a tough situation to be in, because there's a handful of guys that draw ratings and there's a lot of guys who don't. And maybe if the media were more creative and came up with good stories on them, they would.
Well, speaking of a guy who creates and promotes good stories about himself, there's Brooksy's back in it again, and I don't mean the troll name for Bryson. I'm talking about actual Brooks Koepka sharing stories about his perspective on winning majors. He thinks he can beat Tiger and probably Jack. It looks like there's some new stuff coming out where he's talking about mind games, things like that. Some quotes today about the Ryder Cup, about how it's challenging for him to move away from the individualistic aspect of golf into a more team focused event. Have you caught any of that, and do you have any sort of reflection on any of it?
I did, and you know, in some ways I don't disagree with him. I've said for years that one of the reasons that the Ryder Cup has been more successful recently, you know, for the Europeans, is they do not struggle into that transition to team event, whereas the US team always has. Tiger's record stands out for that aspect. You know, they grow up on an island instead of as a team. And I think there's something to that. I don't think it's a popular opinion, but I think there's something to that. The major thing, I mean, I guess, what do you want somebody to say that, oh, golly gee, I really give it my college try, but you know, I don't think I'm going to make it.
Isn't that technically what Kisner says?
Yeah. Well, or as long as you pay me, I might show up.
Yeah.
and with Brooks, I get it, winning one a year for this and that, but he's got to play. He's hurt constantly now. And I like the guy. I wish he respected the passion of the game that fans have a little more, because he dismisses that as I'm an athlete kind of thing. I always feel like he'd rather be playing another sport than golf. This was no different.
That's sort of time tested, right? He's basically said he's got his friends and they're not in golf. He doesn't really like the idea of sticking around and just broing it up. He talks about watching sports on television, rarely talks about focusing on the game of golf. I mean, he's kind of done that to himself at this point. It is his identity to sort of go against the grain in a negative way towards what golf or golfers are, I suppose.
It's a shtick, though, because if it wasn't, he wouldn't be on social media trolling other golfers.
Right. That's
like,
that's
I'm not really interested in golf. And then I'm watching the match and apologizing to Aaron Rodgers for playing with Bryson. Like, enough is enough. Either embrace the fact that you're a bro and you want to hang out and do this and sit at the end of the bar stool and go about this whole thing, or let it go. But everything he says is like a contradiction as of late. And I get it. It's a shtick and it works for him, but it's just super weird.
Who would you rather have in a team event, Brooks Koepka or Kevin Kisner?
Both healthy?
Both extremely healthy. Not the weekend before or after a major, though.
Brooks Koepka.
Okay.
His tee to green game, is as good as anybody. And when his finger down the shaft putter gets hot, there's nobody better.
I've really been intrigued by all the discussion on social about Kisner not being picked and he's a good character and the USA needs that.
I'm not dismissing that, but which guy is not?
Yeah. That's hard. Cause you've always had a sort of interesting take on DJ and he's obviously, one of those guys.
Does he know the Ryder Cup is taking place?
Well, I think the point here is that they're looking for those characters, the guys who say the interesting things, to who kind of challenge the norm and maybe, I guess, probably hoping for guys to strike gold in the event.
You want another hot take on this one?
Reed-esque way without being Patrick Reed. Sure.
If you're not interested in going to the Olympics, you don't qualify for the Ryder Cup.
Oh, yeah, we don't have, so we have loads of time left. I don't think we have enough time for you to talk about the Olympics.
if you're not interested in playing for your country in one, you don't get to play for your country in the other. Now, if you qualify, that's a different story, but that's just the way it is.
Is it circular? I mean, you don't really see any guys declining President's Cup or Ryder Cup bids, do you?
No, because they'd be ridiculed by their peers.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I challenge on that is that the Olympics and golf is so fresh that you haven't built that prestige there. I mean, obviously it's the Olympics, but not everyone perceives the Olympics to be the same way. You're forcing.
I think age brackets dictate that a lot. I do.
Yeah, of course. But you saw Rory's change in perspective from one to the next, and that was great to see. I think even after the Olympics in was that Rio? He was kind of like, yeah, maybe I didn't make the best decision. And he went all in this time around. It was great to see. It'll be interesting to follow the game in 4 years from now and see how those mentalities change as they sort of continue to develop. I don't actually know where the next host is. Is it selected yet? It's got to
be. Yes, but I feel like this is going to be horrible. I don't either. And I'm a huge patriotic person.
Yeah, I'll watch the Olympics from start to end. I have no problem.
Yeah. I think like they've always said the Ryder Cup matters because you're playing for your country. Well, so, I mean, you are in the Olympics and you're doing it on the grandest stage of them all against all the countries. So yeah. I think there's a little bit more to it than that. And I understand that a turn down of that ticket to the Ryder Cup would be, oof, could you imagine the media with that?
Well, you know, maybe someone's already done it and we don't know. They
play it's possible.
They're like, hey, look, you're hurt. Okay.
Yeah. It is possible. But yeah, the Ryder Cup is always a great thing. Like I said, I think it means a little more to the European crowd than it does the American crowd. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I wish in some ways that the American crowd took it a little differently. But to give you an idea, like, if you go through search data on a site like ours, it doesn't even come up on the American search engines until you get close.
Yeah, for sure.
And they're talking about it from the minute it ends to the next one. So mm-hmm. like I it's just a different mindset and one that I think we'll get to bridge at some point. Cause let's be honest, winning is better than losing.
You know, I've been fascinated by the sort of pulse that the American fan has for the Ryder Cup. Obviously there's some stubbornness there because the expectation is we should win all and forever. And this understanding that the European teams just seem to gel better and find ways to beat the US is very challenging for the comfort zone of fans, I think. What I've found really interesting, though, is there was a long time where patriotism was absolute, and it didn't matter who was on the team. It was, you know, you get the guys playing for the jersey, and they're shaking the front of their shirt because that's where the logo is. They're playing for the logo, not for the name on the back. And it seems like the fans are doing a little bit more of the name on the back thing right now than they're doing for the logo on the chest, which I thought was really weird. I mean, you have a guy like Stricker who's going to make the most sensible moves he can, probably not take huge risks. I don't think he's known for taking huge risks. And suddenly he's making horrible decisions in who he selects because this guy's in the wing. And I keep using Kisner today because I think it's been a conversation around everywhere that he's been left off, even though his numbers don't, you know, auto bid or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't understand the how did you leave Kisner off thing, other than maybe the Barstool Sports guys, because I know there's a relationship there. Like, I didn't get it. You could make the case, how did you leave Kevin Na off, one of the hottest players right now? But I didn't understand the Kisner one as much. And I like Kisner. The Patrick Reed one was an interesting one, but there's some health concerns.
Yeah, some serious health concerns, and not just the pneumonia, which is pretty terrible to read about, but he also, I think, had a wrist injury. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm fascinated by this because for a long time, it was very committed. It was like absolute USA, that flag's there, I'm cheering for it. But now it's like, hey, if they don't pick my guy, I'm not cheering for him. Let's go Europe. It's like, wait,
what? I mean, in the THB forum thread alone, there were a couple of American fans cheering for the Europeans. Like, I didn't quite get it. My favorite golfers on the other side, I'm going to root for that. Like, I struggle with that. Listen, it's your thing. If that's what you want to do, I'm not judging you.
You know, I'm going to call it right now. I'm rooting for the U.S., and I'm going to do it from here on out, I think. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Wait, what does I think mean?
Well,
I'm gonna call it right now. Maybe
let's see what you do to upset me so I start rooting against your guys. That's pretty much what happens when I go, why are you cheering for us, dude?
I don't understand.
Yeah,
I'm gonna make a statement that I'm cheering for the U.S. maybe
I'm 100% cheering for the U.S. 100%. The maybe was for you, based on what you say to me, and that's mostly through text. I did us a favor and I looked up next Olympics. It's in Paris. So there's pretty much.
Oh, you know what? I knew that. Yeah. I knew that. Yeah.
No excuse. It's in a relatively safe locale. Who's not going? We should do that right now. We are 4 years away.
Yeah.
Who's the big name who no shows the next Olympics in Paris?
Dustin Johnson.
Will he be Olympics relevant in 4 years?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's the next guy?
Jordan.
I should have blocked out DJ because you're always going to pick him.
Well, I mean, listen, he'll find a reason. Jordan
Spieth. Interesting. Why do you say that?
History.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have a lot to expand on there.
What if the Olympics were in Texas?
Is he from Texas?
I think so.
Yeah. No. I'd like to see Spieth do it. I like to see his I've enjoyed watching his return to prominence. I think he's going to have a big 2022. One major, possibly two. I like where his game is at. Yeah. I think cool. He is going to rise above and have the fans cheering for him.
Are we going to see in our lifetime a player get the 10 majors again?
Ooh. Starting now or starting from when they enter the tour?
Yeah, they can work on what they have already.
Maybe, but it's going to be really hard. The depth of field is so amazing right now. I mean, there are guys on the Korn Ferry Tour. There are guys in Monday morning qualifying that could win in any week.
Who do you like best chance for it right now based on who's actually playing golf?
Right this second?
Very
oh,
second.
You're going to hate my answer.
Is it Bryson?
Yeah, I would say Bryson.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Why would I hate
I'm
that?
A big...
You're like the only guy who comes on the show with the exception of our buddy Adam from Bridgestone, who's like a real big Bryson proponent. So I'm excited when you come on here and share.
I'm not a proponent from the aspect of I think some of the stuff he does is just weird. And I have
stuff you do is weird.
A lot more stories than others do. And I was really critical of his take on when he made the statement about the driver. But I watch players evolve. And when you take a player like Bryson and see what he's done to get where he is, I don't think there's a change that he won't make to get to the next one. I think he's going to win one next year, maybe two. I think we could have a big Bryson Jordan Spieth year next year. But next year's the key. If he doesn't win one next year, he might not win another one. So we'll see what happens.
Interesting.
I want to have a player that you think will get.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I thought that Morikawa was going to break out and start to really get things done. And then We never really saw it. I was really kind of banking on that. I as much as I root against him being awful to golf courses, I would love to see a guy like John Rahm come out and do it.
John Rahm's is another one that's got the chance.
Because he has the ability with his controlled game to go get it done. But no, I wouldn't say I'm particularly excited. I'm going to say Tony Finau. How about that?
Is he playing until he's 80?
Yeah, I hope.
No, I think John Rahm and Morikawa both have a shot. Victor Hovland's going to win some majors too.
We need to sit down and talk about him a little bit at some point because he's kind of had an interesting start to his career, made big changes, it seems like, hasn't quite gotten back to what we thought we saw early on, which is pretty weird.
Yeah, I think you'll see some big things coming from him in the next few years. I thought Matt Wolf had a chance. He's too erratic, and you know there's some other issues going on there. But the young golfers in the game today are something special.
Can I ask you a question, Josh?
You just did.
Can I ask you a question after this question, Josh?
So true story. There is somebody in the golf industry who does that a lot, and not to me, but it became a running joke for a while that they would always come up to the person and say, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" Instead of just asking the question, it became like a running joke for a long time. I don't want to head down that rabbit hole, but yeah, that just reminded me of that.
Well, you know, you're going to feel pretty bad because I wanted to ask you what brought on the depth of stories you've been putting together on THP's homepage. There, you call them a brand story. The last one, the one I can think of right now is Tour Edge Golf. It's a great piece talking about Tour Edge as a company, a little bit of history, that kind of thing. And yeah, thanks a lot for doing that before
Sorry
I ask the
that.
Question. But is this something you plan to do more of? Because it was really interesting. I enjoyed the discussion around it. I mean, obviously Tour Edge is proving themselves in a lot of ways right now. But getting that depth of information, a chance to go look at the brand in total, was really fun for me.
So it's something I had been talking about doing for a while. I don't write most of the stuff on THP. We have a great team of writers, and James and Dean, and you put content together. And I had been enjoying on the back end doing a lot of learning. For those that don't know me, I love history. I love all that stuff. And I always want to learn. And I started doing some research on Toredge for an article. Just, I didn't know what the article was going to be. And it turned into that thing called the brand story, a brand story on Toredge about a small company that's kind of exceeded expectations 30 years later. And I really enjoyed it. Now, for those who haven't read it, it's long. It's like 4,000 words long. So take some time and make your way through it. But, and it dawned on me after I did that, how much I enjoyed it, that I reached out to four or five other companies to do them. And we're going to continue it. And in fact, when this airs, one will have come out earlier this week on Callaway Golf on their golf ball division, which is a really interesting one because last month they announced hitting 20% in golf ball market share, which is a huge feat in golf balls. But the journey they've been on, the story is really about the journey they've been on the last, let's say, 10 years since Chip Brewer got there, to get there, the changes that have been made. We even touch on some of the stuff that was online about manufacturing issues and things like that. And Jason Finley getting involved in that golf ball side of things. And that one's really interesting. I hope people did enjoy it from when they listened to this. If you haven't, it's worth checking out. It's also fairly long. And we have one coming up on Bridgestone Golf and their return to being what I call Bridgestone Golf since Dan Murphy came back and running things. And we have one on Budget Golf, which will come out next week. And it's one of the most fascinating because I learned so much in researching that. I knew that they had retail stores, but I didn't realize how they went from retail to online and how it was back with the bad website and dial-up internet and everything like that. Like, it was pretty fascinating stuff to learn that. And I hope people enjoy that one because when you get to talk to the people behind the brands and you see the passion that they have, and some of them that I've turned down one because I started doing some research on it and I don't want to call out the company. It was so robotic. And when you get those kind of answers, you're like, well, there's nothing here. Like, what am I telling? I want to learn. If you can't help me learn about it, I certainly have nothing to share with the readers. I want people, when they're reading something that's like this, that is pages and pages long, to see it where I'm seeing it from, which is the journey to get wherever we are. And for instance, the golf ball one that just came out on Callaway, it starts where we are at the 20% number, backtracks through the story to a time that things weren't all that great, and then brings you right back to where we are at the 20% and what the future may hold with manufacturing, with some supply issues, things like that. So it's something I've really enjoyed doing. It's not product-based, it's all brand-based. But another thing, and I kind of have this in the Callaway piece that people will have read, is when you're doing a story on growth, there's not a whole lot of, you don't want it to come off as a salesy quote unquote piece, but there's not a lot of negative there. Like, this is about more people trying, finding, and using a product. And I find that sometimes it's hard to head down the path, and I did it with the Toredge one as well, of there's not a lot of negative to discuss. And I think that's okay. Everybody's always looking for that slanted angle. And I think it's okay just to take a minute to talk about the history of brands and, you know, what they're doing and from a specific piece and how they're doing it. That was a long-winded version to say, yes, I'm doing more of them.
Yeah. And I'm going to circle back on Toredge because I obviously haven't had a chance to read the Callaway one yet, as it's not released as we're recording this, but I find it interesting to get that depth. Obviously, we've had them on the podcast already to talk a little bit about their product, but they're doing interesting things there, and they're not doing it in a way where they're like pushing the popularity contest, I suppose you could say, of the avid online golfer sphere or whatever we're calling us. But they're doing it in a way that's competitive. We saw that with C721 this year. The way that people talked about that, almost surprised. I've got the 3-iron from their C721 irons in bag, and it's an absolute monster.
Do you have an iron cover on it?
I absolutely do.
Wow.
You're welcome. But they also have Hot Launch just released. which is ridiculously priced as far as I'm concerned, based on what we've seen out there right now. With big time tech in there, I saw Diamond Mill Face, I saw the Houdini Soul, I saw Vibercore. That's right, Dean, I do read your articles. A lot of good stuff going on in there. And
yeah, it's an interesting take because there's a lot of, well, I'll call it well-priced equipment on the market today, and some companies are doing it with near net forging is the best way to say it. So they're buying a cataloged iron and making subtle changes to it and releasing that. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's been done. There's a number of brands doing it, the direct to consumer model that way. And then there's a company like a Tor Edge that is designing in house and has R&D people and has CAD work done internally and is doing all these things and still putting it out at that price point. Not all their clubs are at that price point, but these are,
and definitely not.
They have a tech story that I found incredibly fascinating for this one. Now, I have not hit the new line yet. We should have it any day now. But based on the last two exotics lines and the brand story I did, I expect it to exceed the perception of price, and doing so in a different way than just releasing a model that kind of looks similar to a few others, putting a new logo on it, maybe add some mill lines. This is a completely built from scratch golf club, and I respect that.
It's kind of wild. And I like that there are elements and almost, I don't want to call them shadows, but there are little hints at technology that's really worked well for Tour Edge, and it validates a product. And I know this is a discussion you and I have had numerous times, is can a golf company price them out of relevance being too cheap? And I think it's great that they have a premier product that they can sort of cast those technologies into their lower priced models, the cheaper models, if you want to call them that, and give people an opportunity to say, well, I mean, hell, I see this diamond face technology built into their best products. If it's in this, I should have confidence that I can go out and hit it and experience a positive story. And I think there's nothing but good things that can come from that. Do you like that design? Do you think other companies should take a look and say, can we do this too, now that there's going to be a pretty significant gap on what's affordable in golf?
Aren't they? I'll ask you this.
Some of them.
Yeah, but most of the larger companies have two specific lines, and I'll use Callaway and TaylorMade, the two largest, as an example. You have in irons, you have Apex, and then previously you had Maverick, and next, you know, before that you had Apex and Rogue, and next could be Rogue. You know, so hitting two different price points, both packed with technology, one trickles into the other, so to speak. And I think it's important. I don't think everybody is ready to spend $3,500 on a golf bag, but I also don't think everybody replaces each piece every year. So in my research for a different article, I learned that golfers replace their drivers about every 18 months and their irons every 35 months. By and large, you know, at a large thing, and I surveyed 2,600 people for that. So I was pretty interested in it. Demographics play a huge role in the replacement time frame, but I love the idea of a brand that has separation as long as they have clear-cut messaging about that separation.
So let me ask you a follow-up question on that. Is when you look at the market that it currently is and how quickly products flying off the shelves and the demand being greater than the supply, I would assume the used products market is going to be much smaller, certainly on the retail side, obviously not on the marketplace or whatever side, but in terms of going out to a big box store, going online and buying that stuff, it might be harder to come by. And certainly those discount values are going to be a little bit lower. The percentages are going to be lower than we would expect in years past. Is this an opportunity for Tour Edge to really propel their brand, knowing that they can bridge that gap with something like Hot Launch? It's something that a lot of companies can't do at their price point. And I know Hot Launch does well.
Possibly.
I know it does well, but are we at the point where it does amazing?
No. But we are at the point where it's going to exceed what it did previously. And that's an important note. So in years past, we had Hot Launch, Hot Launch 2, 3, 4, 5, and now a second 5, sort of. It'll do extremely well. And it's done well for them. With that said, golfers by and large still buy from stores. And it's not in a lot of stores. I hope that changes for them because I think they have something here. And I think their naming convention works. I think their products work. And I think the people behind the products have a passion that not everybody has. But they have to be found in more stores to go to the next level. Mm. At the level they're at, absolutely. And they're doing really well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to unpack that more, but we just don't have time. We've been chatting for quite a while now. I'm going to let you go, but we do always have a little segment at the end of the show where I give you an opportunity to ask me any questions you want.
I've been waiting for this for a long time.
I figured you might be, yeah.
No, actually, I didn't have it, but here's a question for you.
Okay.
So when this drops, this show, you will literally be on your way here.
Yeah, ideally, yeah.
So no, you will be. actually, probably not, because you're not going to be awake yet. Will you listen? Do you listen to your own shows?
Oh, it is the hardest thing to do, to listen to my own shows. I try to do it every week, but it's very hard.
Yeah. The second follow up to that is when this drops, people are going to be tuning in as you're making the drive. So giving feedback on your answering questions is not easy. We don't want you doing that while you're behind the wheel. How do you like the feedback done? And I got this question from somebody else and I wanted to ask you. So let's say you have a show and you discuss Puma apparel, Callaway drivers, ping putters. Okay. Mm-hmm. Making up three random things. Do you want them to discuss it in social media and the forum thread about this show, or do you want it discussed in each of those individuals' places?
So we're talking about people who are part of the THB community who are chatting in there. Yeah.
Correct.
I think,
I mean, there's thousands of golfers chatting every day. They listen to this show. Where do you want them to chat about it?
Yeah, I have tried to give a call to action to our listeners who are involved in some of the social channels we put the show up on. I'm not great on Twitter, but I'm absolutely in my comfort zone on the forum, talking to the community of golfers who I have full confidence in, who aren't going to rake me through the coals in every opinion I have. But I think it's always fun as a content creator to see that discussion really take hold on a thread. And if we can drag those into the other separate threads, I always think it's interesting. But it's fun to get that show thread or the show discussion going, because it usually leads to about 6 or 7 other things, like mini topics in there, which is pretty perfect considering the show is called Off Course. It's probably one of the few places on THP we don't, you know, make sure people stay relatively on course with. So
and
I would
my
say
final question. You belong to a country club.
I do. Please don't do it.
No, absolutely not. I'm not heading down there. Actually, I should ask, are you allowed to have your own golf cart? Not push cart, golf cart.
No, cannot. You can drive it there. Yeah.
You can drive
park
it.
Yeah.
So if they changed that rule and had a trail fee where you were allowed to use your own cart and you were gifted one, would you want a golf cart or a scooter? Single rider.
If the choice was a decked out riding cart or a Finn scooter, something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, dude. That is such a hard question. Well,
this is riveting radio with you sitting there pondering it.
I'll be honest with you. My wife just told me to pick a spaghetti sauce and I was thinking way harder about that. Man, Finn is so much fun, but I think the camaraderie that comes with a riding cart is hard to pass up. As much as it was super fun, and I would probably take the Finn opportunity any chance I could, I've always really enjoyed that aspect of riding with someone, chatting with them about golf, or, you know, ideally not current events because there's nothing good to talk about there. But, you know, that I would miss the camaraderie unless, All my buddies joined me in the Finn scooter, the Finn squad. So that would be my final answer. Yes, if agreed upon with my group.
So no answer whatsoever.
Cart, unless my group all buys a Finn scooter and then I'm in. You gotcha. Jerk.
That's all I got.
All right, Josh, that was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to reading your Callaway article. That'll be up on thehackersparadise.com prior to this show releasing. So go check that out. Give him some feedback. He's obviously all in on doing these types of pieces. So we're going to press him to do every single company that ever existed in golf by the time he's done. Thanks for coming on, buddy. I appreciate you.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.